Well, Jim, thanks very much for coming on the program. And the first thing I would just say is I want you to take us into where you grew up on Long Island and just the unbelievable strength of Long Island soccer, whether it's youth, college, the professional game through history. Take us through that and growing up there and the influences.
It's amazing, Glenn. Thank you. It's great to be on your show. I was really fortunate, along with about 3,000 other kids, that ended up joining a club called the Massapequa Soccer Club on the South Shore of Long Island in Nassau County. It's a club that was dominated by football and baseball, like most places in the country in the early 70s. But we had something different. The coach of the Cosmos, Gordon Bradley, when he got the job at the Cosmos, got a house in Massapequa. A guy from Northern Ireland named Pat McComiskey was a janitor and a soccer coach at a CYO called Our Lady of Lourdes Church in Massapequa Park. Those two guys were recruiting soccer players. They couldn't find any. They got together and formed the Massapequa Soccer Club. They went from 60 kids, primarily boys, in the early 70s to 4,000 kids over the next 6 or 7 years, directly along the rise of the New York Cosmos, who played at Hofstra University, which is where I ended up going to college. But it was 20 minutes from our club in our home. And we got a chance to almost have a small European experience of having a local pro club that was involved in the community, that lived with us in the community, and that actually ran and influenced our club's culture in the early days. So looking back, you can't replicate it. Now people are paying millions and thousands to replicate what we kind of had. And it was really amazing. We owe a lot to Gordon Bradley and Pat McComiskey and all the other great people. So Massapequa, once again, was a great we had the bad uniforms. We had the maroon and gold made out of burlap, but we won it for 20 years.
Jim Kilmeade joining us here, BQE Soccer Partners. He's a partner there. He's a national director of soccer at A-Turf as well. All right, so you look in your bio, and there's a million things we could go to here, but I'm going to go right to the Long Island Rough Riders, USISL, team that won the national championship that year. It's a team that was based on and comprised of a lot of these Long Island guys, and I'm sure a few of them came out of the Massapequa Soccer Club. It was topped off with guys like Tony Miola, Chris Ormus, Gio Savarese, who a lot of my listeners obviously know all these people. You were heavily involved with that team as a general manager. You won awards. Tell me a little bit about just that time period in the USISL, because that was a big moment for Long Island.
Big moment for Long Island, and as you know, Glenn, a big moment for the country. It was the reemergence, the renaissance of the pro game again, starting out of just the ethnic leagues, after the NSL collapsed, that's all we had, and the MISL collapsed. It was huge. And so what I did is I took a formula for a guy that I worked for my first year out of college named Todd Lewicki, who went on, he's going to be a U.S. Hall of Famer in every sport, he started the Sounders, the Seattle Seahawks, the Wild. He was the GM, the youngest GM in the country of the New York Arrows, a team I tried out for, but ended up in the front office and on the reserve team, blessing in disguise. Todd was kind of a mentor. He had a great community program. And so when I had the opportunity, I was approached by Peter Collins, the U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer and president of the Long Island Junior Soccer League. Amazing person, great friend of our family, who approached me and said there's a couple of lawyers that are looking to put a pro team in the New York metropolitan area. So I brought your name up. And I said, I thank Peter. I took a meeting. And so I ended up going with these guys, and I basically was handed the keys to a franchise with no name. Didn't know anything about the league, the USL league that you and I played in that we can talk about later. This was an unrelated league. It was actually called the USISL, which is the U.S. Interregional Soccer League, based out of Texas, and Francisco Marcos' brainchild, who's another Hall of Famer. So we came to a diner meeting, which you have a lot of diners on Long Island, and it started from there. And literally from concept to operation in June of 1993, we launched the franchise that played its first game on April 5th at home against the Detroit Wheels, another footnote in soccer that went away after that year, to a sold-out Mitchell Park in Uniondale, New York, on a brutal, freezing cold spring night. And we ended up losing, which kills me. Now, then we did go on to a 10-game win streak. But really, we only had a couple of full-time employees, myself being it, and we ran for office. We were out every single night. And the first thing I knew we had to do, and the good news about being in Long Island, in the New York metro area, you have enough talent there. You don't need to go anyplace else. So my goal was to bring everyone back that was either at college or across the country, and bring them all back to Long Island and to put this team and to build it around it. So the Chris Armas is at a Brentwood, New York, Brentwood Soccer Club, St. Anthony's High School, Adelphi University in Garden City. We got Chris out of college. Giovanni Savrisi, LIU out of Brooklyn, even though he's from Venezuela. He came in to us. And we put a team together of all Long Island guys, especially the first year. Tony came in 95. And I think he kind of put us over the top and gave us national visibility. So from concept operation, we went on and became Organization of the Year. I found a coach that I had great respect for from the New York Quarter Bavarian Soccer Club, Alfonso Mondello, and hired him as my first hire. Jimmy McGill, who used to be the coach of the United. Jimmy. Remember Jimmy?
Yep.
And he had a Spanish guy and a Northern Ireland guy, both Long Island guys. They had different philosophies. They came together and put together, and helped with a culture that really became a powerhouse. And as I said, it was a tough team to coach. He had a lot of strong personalities, but the team did really well on the field. But what the team did off the field, and I don't know if you can get players to do this anymore, nobody made a lot of money on this team. I think the highest paid player was making $1,500 a month. And we trained 6-7 days a week. It was tough. Alfonso Mondello took this as if he was coaching Real Madrid. His goal was to be the coach of Real Madrid. Jimmy McGill already had a great career. He came in to add the experience. And every player, with the first 8 players we signed, we did over 120 appearances before our first game from June to April. They were calculated, and they were big and they were small, and they were in corporate America. They were primarily with the youth. And we really addressed this before you could send out an email or a text or anything else. You had to go out and meet people. So we ran for office the old-fashioned way. We shook hands and kissed babies. We were authentic. We all had bad Long Island accents, so we were accepted on the island. And then with the team had a great run. And that was the beginning of really an interesting history.
Remarkable story. Now, I want to take you back to, obviously you played in the USL, so did I. You were on New York. I was here in Houston. I moved to Houston after being on the Pennsylvania Stoners, one of the greatest names in the history of soccer. But anyway, for a lot of reasons. But, you just talked about something that I'm wondering if we're losing a little bit in MLS, and that is the personal connection with the fan and the players. You know how many clinics you did playing for New York. I know how many I did for Houston. Oh, yeah. It far surpassed the amount of games we played. It was probably triple or quadruple the amount. So, have we lost a little bit of that in Major League Soccer, you think?
I do. I'm in awe of Major League Soccer's overall accomplishments. I think they really paid a price for not having that in the early days of MLS, especially in our area where they thought that they were. I think any franchise, and you've been around, Glenn, there are some people in soccer and in other sports, but apparently in soccer, especially in the earlier days, they just thought people had been waiting for a professional soccer team to show up at their doorstep and people be running with their credit cards to the stadium. And, as you know, it's not the case. Right. People are busy. They've always been busy, and we're not the mainstream sport. So I feel that I don't think that they've lost it. They connect in a different way. But I'm telling you right now, I think that everything that's old becomes new again. So I think that you're going to see more of that. Because some of the franchises, the Seattles and those company and those groups in Atlanta, they didn't just do all this with social media. I think the most successful clubs have connected. And some have just been in these markets like Portland that that really actually have that dynamic that they are living for your franchise. Most of us don't have that. In New York, I know you have to outwork everybody. And if we start something again soon, we're going to have a modern formula that part of that will be based on personal contact and involvement, not just almost an arrogance of that we're here and now we're going to define the market. The market doesn't need you. You need them.
No question. Jim Kilmeade joining us here on Soccer Matters. And he is the managing partner of BQE Soccer Partners, national director of soccer at A-Turf. Okay, so you did the perfect segue there as a guy who knows TV. And radio. Take us into the potential of USL coming back to Long Island and your involvement in it, Jim.
Yes. Left the Rough Rider franchise in its last years as a professional franchise in the USL in 2006. And actually, that's when we brought Jimmy Rooney back and Giovanni back, and they all retired as Rough Riders back at the day. Rough Riders now more of a training organization, have a PDL franchise, which I think is League One now. And there's really quite a void out here. The Cosmos came in, made a little bit of a splash, and then disappeared. They didn't have a long-term plan. So right now we're engaged, and we've been engaged for quite a few years. My partner Kevin Reardon and I, BQE, initially, it was to bring a Major League Soccer franchise, and we had a stadium solution at Belmont Park, which now is going to become the New York Islanders franchise. We met with Don Garber. We met with everybody, and they didn't believe this was a viable site. And then New York City FC came in, which with phenomenal resources. We even engaged them, even though it wouldn't have been our franchise. And they didn't think it was the right place. Well, look where they are right now, in a stadium position, which is nowhere. Yep. And the Islanders were smart enough to get that stadium. But we think that's great for Long Island because it's going to be a sporting venue, but that would have been the place for a great MLS franchise. So now MLS being taken, that's not going to happen in the New York Metro Long Island area. We've gone to a USL type model. And the good news is we're probably a couple of months away from announcing formally to be part of a soccer specific stadium build and establish a USL franchise. And NISA has spoken to us too. They're great people. And we'll defer to our decision as to who we'll be along with at the time when the time comes. But this is going to be a huge groundbreaking development, commercial development site for Long Island that we're now have carved out probably a 7,500 seat covered stadium horseshoe expandable to 10 on a main road of mass transportation next to an airport. It will be unprecedented and it will change the dynamics of Long Island. Part of what we're going to do with that franchise, our vision, Glenn, is not only to have to do a great job and run a great franchise and to have it represent the values of the community, but to establish a youth developmental program, non-pay for play, just outside of the USDA structure, really looking to develop players to become professional players to sell into Europe. We believe Christian Pulisic's dad is from Long Island. Mark Pulisic was a great player. Mm-hmm. We know the talent is here. The next Chris Armas, the next Danny Mullers, the next Jimmy Rooney's. We know, and we know if we got those guys at 16 years old into, you know, Celtic or Rangers or a team in Norway, and we'd be setting up a small network in Europe as a stepping stone to the big clubs. And our goal would be to have, and probably the value proposition financially will be that we think because of the ethnic diversity of Nassau, Suffolk County, Brooklyn, and Queens, we'll be able to put that together and have a great franchise that will actually feed not only the USL team, but will be a long-term contributor to put players into Europe.
You know, sitting here listening to you, Jim, you quickly pull yourself back into visionaries and people that grow the game. Now, you know, when you and I were playing in the USL back in 1984, it was a pretty dark time in a lot of ways. It was a very positive time in a lot of ways, too, going through that experience. But when you look at the USL and how many markets have USL teams and job openings, opportunity for players, a sense of community, Amen. All these things, it's pretty remarkable because at the time we were playing the sport, that did not exist.
No, it didn't exist. And I always said, even more than we're always talking about players, and that's what the game's all about. But just think about the opportunity USL gave me with Francisco Marcos' vision. First as a player, and actually, just so you know, Glenn, I had to sell myself as not only a player, but also a guy that ran all the ticket sales. So when I went to a game at Hofstra, not only was I hoping to play, but I sold every ticket to everybody in that stand. And I had no humility. I was very comfortable with that. That's what you had to do to make a living.
Sure.
And I made more money doing that, and I got a presence in the community. But look at all the management that has been developed. Look at all the marketing people, the ticket sales people, the PR people. It's the USL is literally – there would be no MLS without the USL. And back in the day when I was head of North America back in the late 90s, Umbro had purchased the USL, if you remember. Then Nike bought it, and it was all kinds of stuff going on. Umbro bought it and hired me to be head of the brand, which had been split after it had gone bankrupt. I had a dual job, run North America, Canada, manage the Canadian license, American license, and go into the USL, they put me into a VP of marketing slot. We don't know what to do with the USL. We're English guys. We don't understand why this is so hard. We just pack our stadiums. And could you spend time? So I was going from Tampa to New York quite a bit, once a month at least, and was to try and make this more of a commercially viable league while Francisco and the other people were trying to just get better ownership groups. These are self-fulfilling, as you know. And we were able to put the first TV package together with Fox Sports World at the time, which has now evolved to Fox Sports Channel and to God knows what it is now. It's something different. And so we had some success with that, brought a couple of hotel deals in. And the main thing at that point in time, I walked into Major League Soccer office and they were fading. Tampa was going down. It was a tough time for soccer.
Contracting teams,
and
yeah.
They had 10 markets and we had 35 states and 3 Canadian provinces. Now, were all our franchises viable? No. They were not all stable, but we were doing the professional game at sustainable levels, as you know, like you did in Houston, I did with the Nationals, in 35 states, from Des Moines, Iowa, to places no one's ever going to go. You know, we went to Tacoma, and we had all these people. So people like me got a chance to develop a skill to be employable, to be either a general manager, to be a player personnel, be an operations person, a marketing guy, a sales team. And you got to do it on the job, because if you're in the USL, you're not a specialist. You were going to do anything and everything. I mean, I was a general manager of the Rough Riders in 1994. I put the signs out on the side of the field, and they were not fancy electronic. They were wood, and they were heavy. And because we didn't have the money to do it. So I have a great appreciation for doing literally every job it takes to put the radio deals together, like you've been doing. And like radio guys like you usually had to do everything himself, because there was no money with franchise. Now in MLS, you're in a position where it's much more professional.
But, well, you know, I have a crack staff of 15 in here right now. That'll bring the coffee in a moment's notice. You know that.
Yeah, no, you've kept them quiet, which is great. But the point is that you're so right. The USL did more for American soccer, professional American soccer, than any league could ever do. And MLS, I think, even knows this now. And it's just great to see now the level of professionality within USL is really gone up, not just in the valuations, which may, or, you know, for me, I have a hard time with a lot of these valuations out there in MLS and in USL. But it's a great, because one of the things I used to say in my patented speeches years ago, the phrase soccer business is like an oxymoron. We want to make it not that way. But right now you can't say that. Our sport has arrived. You know, it's a viable business. There's value in what we've all contributed to. And so there's always that sense of a bit of pride to have played a part in it. But we want to do it again. And so I want to make sure that everybody knows that. We're going to do it again.
You've 100% pioneered it. This is great, exciting news for Long Island. Your career at all different levels, Jim, exceptional. And you come out of that group of East Coast guys, too, that, you know, me in New Jersey and Long Island, everybody's aware of each other. Everybody's getting involved with it for the right reasons in the very beginning and continue to do great things. Thank you so much for coming on. It's a great story, and appreciate you doing some great USL talk and your career talk as well.
Yeah, we're all part of the same fraternity, Glenn. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jim.